Hey, and welcome to Skeptic Hangout, the place where we sit back, relax, and chit-chat about intriguing and sometimes controversial topics through the lens of skepticism. We are Richard, Josh, and Laura, and today we're going to be discussing free speech. So grab your English tea or your Merkin double shot mocha and join us as we discuss whether or not speech should be free, and if not, how much should it cost? This is Skeptic Hangout. Free speech. Now,
Oh,
Richard,
I'm
you're not allowed to talk
completely
on
off
this episode
the
because we have free speech and you don't.
Yeah, that's exactly that. And I'm completely thrown off the bat to begin with because for some reason I thought we were talking about free will.
Oh, that's another good
So,
one. Join us next week for free will. No promises.
we do not have free speech. We're not allowed to speak freely in this country. And until very recently, we also had blasphemy laws as well. So,
Oh,
good
really?
old Britain,
Were they
good
enforced
old.
though? Like, have they been enforced in the last few decades?
I don't know. I've not fallen foul of them myself, but I would imagine if you're in Northern Ireland, there's a very strong possibility you would have at the time.
Wow.
I think they were only recently appealed in. I think it was now the years. I've no idea. I think in my mind, I'm thinking somewhere between 2011 and 2016 in England, and as recently as the last couple of years in Scotland, where they would actually enforce. So yeah, we're not allowed to talk.
What
So
restrictions on free speech did you have beyond the blasphemy laws, or was it just like you can't say fuck Jesus or any of that kind
no,
of
yeah,
stuff?
there's certain things you can't say in Britain in case you offend people, and I don't mean that in a kind of, white male supremacist way, but you're not allowed to, I'm not exactly sure of the ins and outs of it, but I think it's about like how far you go before you step on somebody's toes.
See, I think we
And
already have that in our
in a
country
nutshell.
too.
Yeah, I think Laura was going to say exactly
Yeah,
what I
you
was
were
going to
starting to
say.
talk, so I stopped,
Yeah,
but
we stopped at the same time because we were going to make the same point in that there are restrictions in free speech over here. We like to tout out free speech, but like if you're like saying like I'm going to kill somebody and you're very specific about you're going to kill them, that isn't legal. Threats of violence are not legal. So there are limits to free speech, and nobody seems to understand where they are lately. Like a corporation can limit free speech, like they can say what you can do on their platforms, and that has nothing to do with whether or not your free speech is being taken away from you. A lot of people seem to get that idea that they can say whatever they want on their internet, despite the fact that they've signed up for terms and conditions of whatever platform they're on. Free speech. For anybody that doesn't know, which hopefully most of our viewers know, if not, here's a slight education. It means the government can't stop you from speaking freely. And for the most part, we had that with a couple caveats where I do think it's important. But I honestly, there are some areas where I am for maybe a little bit more restriction. I don't think people that aren't doctors should be able to give medical advice on big platforms and have that be okay. I've gone back and forth on that. But I've seen like a QAnon spread through lack of oversight in free speech platforms. And then you get those kinds of conspiracy theories coming out. If lack of oversight seems to lead to white supremacy, misogyny, and horrible stuff like that. So I'm conflicted because I do think free speech is important. But and like I've always said, if you don't agree to a platform, you could go ahead and make your own platform for free speech. But there's a problem with that because of what happens in unregulated platforms where it's completely off, where there's no rules of etiquette at all.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different nuances here that you've brought up, and I hope we get to kind of stretch out and talk about both of them. But one is governments controlling what a person can and can't say and where that line is. But the other one is like we tout around our amendments and our constitution without really realizing how the actual practice within countries is either very similar or ours is behind, right? So we talk about free speech as being like a quote unquote privilege that we have, but we don't really have anything much different from what I know of than what Gulliver has over in the UK, right? Like, honestly, bigotry is not okay. Hate speech isn't okay. Threats of violence aren't okay. And they say that free speech, I say they, I hate that because who's they? I've heard it said.
That's the conspiracy.
Unidentifiable
theorist.
Sources, right? That the big purpose of the free speech thing was that you should be able to talk out against the government and disagree with what the government's doing. And that was the importance of not oppressing the people by telling them they can't disagree with whatever the government is doing at the time. And I think we even see a little bit of that where it's not necessarily illegal, but where people are put under pressure not to speak out, or like during the Trump administration, for example, like you have a lot of people saying like, well, you can't speak out against him because he's the president and yada, yada, yada. Like,
go to another country.
Things. Right, right, right. If you don't like what I have to say, go to another country. Yeah. And like that kind of thing where disagreement was frowned upon, that protection needed to be there in order to allow people to still have that level of disagreement, whether pressure was put on them to be quiet or not. Like, they still had that level of protection because of that amendment. So I do see where it's actually in the last few years been kind of,
it's been misused for the most part. It's like people think you can't have dissenting opinions, but this isn't even the government. This is like, you can't have dissenting opinions and be American. Like if you're talking about, like, it's weird that we had the people saying to other people that you can't talk bad about the administration when this free speech law was made so that you could talk bad about the administrations. Exactly. In other countries, you couldn't have what happens on SNL where they have Alec Baldwin making a Trump impression. You couldn't do that because you're mocking it. That's like what free speech is fighting for. And this idea of like, if you don't like what the president has to say, get out of the country is so bizarre. But at least those people aren't saying like the government's telling them to get out. They're just not liking what they're saying and telling the other individuals to get out of the country.
Right.
So what about in the case of because this is a big one that comes up with free speech a lot, is comedy. And comedians and what they say and how far they push things, the nuances of what they say. How does all that fit into free speech?
I am the biggest fan. This is going to sound terrible, and I'm probably going to misspeak. This is me off the top of my head, and I may change this to be a little bit more nuanced after we discuss it. But I'm a big fan of social pressure over regulation. Right? I'm more in favor of people not supporting a comedian because they think it's poor taste, because they're saying things that are inappropriate about like a demographic or something, than I am any sort of government regulation saying, you, Mr. Comedian, cannot say this. In fact, I think comedy is one of those areas where we can start to get into areas that are taboo or inappropriate and acknowledge them and play with them a little bit. But when you're talking then about, oh, so therefore it's okay for me to slander or cause pain to a social group, like especially a marginalized social group, just because I'm a comedian. And I would disagree with that. I just don't think that government is the one that should be regulating it. I think it should be social pressures of saying like, we are not going to support comedians who cause others, like deliberately cause others pain and suffering to get a few laughs. Right.
What about in the case of things like, and I'm sure there are similar instances now, but I don't, pretty much don't watch TV now, so I don't come across them. And in the 70s and the 80s, there was a, now I don't remember the name of it, but there was a comedy on British TV, and the main character was really racist, but it was written in such a way that it was actually taking the piss out of racist people.
It was satire.
It wasn't laughing with them. It was laughing at them. It was so subtle that a lot of racist people missed it and actually laughed along with it.
I mean, we have that today with South Park, and people think that Cartman's the hero, and when he's supposed to be the butt of the joke, he's supposed to be extreme and not something that you're supposed to be looking up to. But people's like, oh, he hates black people, he hates Jews, this is a great character, right. This is who I'm idolizing, when they're taking the piss out of it. All the way back to like All in the Family with Archie Bunker being a racist, he was the butt of the jokes for a lot of it. And I think that's similar to what you're talking about there.
Yeah,
I think that's okay. I do wish more people understood satire and understood where the joke was. Like, I see today all the time, people say that Tropic Thunder couldn't be made today. And there could be some argument for it because of the blackface on Robert Downey Jr. But again, it was taking the piss out of people that actually thought that was okay. Robert Downey Jr.
was the butt of the people. Yeah.
He was the butt of the joke on that. So I can understand, like, when people at the time when people were saying it was wrong, came at a time of real racial inequality. It with the George Floyd instance, that's when I was really seeing a lot of people talk down on that. But I do think there's room for nuance. I'm not going to say necessarily that it was okay for him to do it. I'm not going to say it's bad, because everybody needs to go on their social scale on where a joke is crossing a line or not. And that's what really Laura was talking about with what was basically cancel culture on people. It's the audience gets to decide what's okay today and what isn't. And if they say that Ricky Gervais saying transphobic jokes is not okay, he's not losing any rights, especially since I think he's English, but or this go Dave Chappelle, he's not losing rights because people don't like him or are trying to get it so he doesn't get any more specials. You're not losing rights by people turning against him and talking down on him in Twitter. What's happening, if the government was doing it, that'd be a problem. But if people are turning on comedians because they've told some jokes where they're punching down on a marginalized community, that's not wrong. That's how things should work. You should be like able to voice your opinions and then drown
and have
out.
Them countered. Yeah.
That's exactly what it's supposed to be. And if you're getting drowned out because your opinions are outdated, change your outlook, or look in to see the other outlook and see where you might be erring wrong. Because I'm not above saying like people can change and they can realize the error of their ways. But if you're going to constantly go on like, oh, they're trying to cancel me, this is about free speech, you're missing the point.
You have comedians who will make fun of other groups, like Ricky Gervais and his trans jokes are a great example, or Dave Chappelle. Right. But then you have people who have disabilities or belong to a specific demographic, and they're the ones bringing comedy to bring awareness to that either disability or that group. And so you really have to be careful about regulating. You're not allowed to talk about this, not allowed to talk about that, because those comedians, on the other hand, tend to get very positive receptions and they tend to raise a lot of awareness. So if you have, say, a trans person that's making jokes, but in making jokes, they're illustrating what it's like to be a trans person or helping someone outside the community to kind of understand it, but they're doing it through parody or through comedy. I think that's really, really a good way to reach people. And it's really important. One of my favorite comedians is Zach Anner, and he has cerebral palsy, and he's hilarious, but he raises a lot of awareness. And so I think what you're saying is really important. There's this nuance between whether or not someone is taking another person and targeting them to make them the butt of a joke and marginalizing them or making them feel bad, and a person who's using a type of a joke to raise awareness about a topic or to get conversation going about a topic.
My biggest thought on it is some people are trying to push for not just them not getting future jobs or whatever. A lot of people want Netflix to get rid of these specials entirely, and I'm not sure I disagree with them on that. And so, like, you don't just go after the people, you got to take a look at the platforms on it. And that's another thing where people are saying for cancel culture. I fully agree. People should be, or I don't know if agree. I fully think that people should be speaking with their wallet. And if they have a problem with it, there's money's going to talk more than angry people on Twitter. So if there's a platform that's raising people up that are doing horrible things or speaking horrible things, it's up to you as the individual to do something about it, instead of like again, it's the individual is not the government for free speech.
Yeah, I tend to kind of agree with Josh a little bit there. I think the platforms that are allowing these things on, I mean, who's monitoring it to start with? If it's offending people after being aired, and it is something that is offensive, how did it get aired to begin with? And, you know, and how do we decide what is offensive to begin with? You know, I think it's difficult. And I'll use Laura's example because I've got my best friend's fiance has got cerebral palsy. And, she takes the piss out of herself all the time, and she's hilarious with it. She really is funny. And something like that, to me, is far, far, even though it might offend some people, is far, far different to somebody who's, you know, me as a white cis male, taking the piss out of black gay people. It's a completely different thing.
And the power dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And that, the mind, to me, my mind boggles as to how that would get to censors to begin with. And be aired, because there is that kind of, as Josh says, that power dynamic. It just makes it offensive already. Whereas somebody, a black gay comedian taking the piss out of themselves, would be a completely different thing. So, you know, where's the accountability to begin with?
Well, and then if other people within that community get offended, then that's something that person has to face and has to deal with, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But, yeah, you talked about censorship, like who makes that decision, right? And I think it really, I heard something on Facebook, I can't remember exactly how it goes, but something along the lines of like parody, like making fun of somebody should go uphill, not downhill. Like, and I can't remember exactly the way it's worded, but you make fun of those above you or those in a position of privilege. And that's a way of sort of challenging the power structure, right? And being able to have some sort of power within that power structure, even though you're beneath them, even if your only power is in mocking them, right? And I think that there's kind of a little bit something to that. I don't like the idea of having hard, fast rules of you're not allowed to say this, you're not allowed to say that. But there is something to be said, like what Gilliver was talking about with companies making the decision to censor in advance, like watching the video and saying, you know, this isn't the kind of views we want represented on our platform, or these aren't the kinds of things we want said on our platform. I don't see anything wrong with that. I just wonder if some of the time, those in censorship might not have the same sensitivities as those in these small demographics, right? Like, how did Chappelle get put on Netflix or whatever it was? And it's like, well, it needed to be aired for the people to see it, to get offended, to kind of, and I could be totally wrong because I haven't seen his video. It may have been completely blatant and obvious. I don't know. But maybe sometimes getting through the censorship and getting the reaction of the people is how it gets, what is it, like, exposed, kind of, and how it gets discussed.
Yeah, very good. I think that's a very good point, yeah, and it kind of counters what I was saying quite well, if I'm honest, that, you know, maybe, you know, if you're playing it to a room full of people who genuinely find it funny, maybe it does need that wider exposure to be seen that it's not funny, and I've not seen the one you're referring to either, so I'm not speaking specifically about that. But maybe it does need that wider exposure for people to say, actually, you know, look at what you're doing. It's not funny. I'm not concerned. That's how I stand corrected.
I mean, there's also the fact that these were probably contracts that were done before the specials even aired. True. So again, you do have to kind of speak with your wallet and just like, they let this happen. If you want to keep using these comedians, we're gone, because there is the idea that maybe the damage is already done. Maybe they can't remove it for a certain amount of time or something like that. So I would want to take this conversation away from Netflix a little bit, and let's just talk about free speech on the internet overall. Do you guys agree that there should be a line on where free speech is? Because I kind of hinted at the beginning about like,
yeah,
the conspiracy theories populating over like 4chan and 8chan and stuff like that. And do you think that there should be kind of some kind of oversight? Because we've seen the damage of unchecked unchecked bad facts can do. And it's just, I kind of almost want to say there's a line where we got to stop them on free speech, but I'm not sure exactly where that line is. Like, I'd say definitely if you're speaking out of turn about medical stuff, you need to be silenced and taken off of that, whatever platform you're using. But if you're a jackass who happens to be racist, I'm not going to say you have to be removed from the platform, because there's a difference in the harm. But if you're using that racism ideology to like plan attacks against a certain group, then again, now you cross the line. I'm just not sure where the line is on every individual subject, but I do think there needs to be oversight on the internet. And I can't say that I agree with full range free for all on it.
Yeah, we talked about this. I don't know what episode it was. I don't know whether it was a flat earth one or the social media, or even both. That happened where people were talking shit on the internet, and they didn't stop them speaking, but what they did with the Flat Earth stuff on YouTube, they didn't actually stop the voices, but what they did was they put disclaimers up every time it was on, and they kind of put their algorithms lower down, so it was harder to find that stuff. They still gave them the platform, but they also gave it with, caveats that, you know, this is not an accepted scientific theory, whatever it is. Our own video on the Flat Earth had such a warning on it. and that's a good thing. Even though we weren't promoting it as such, we were just discussing it. But I think that's a good thing. And I think it's a reasonable way to get around a blank ban on something, on a controversial subject.
It could be a good thing, but it could also work sort of against us when you're talking about, like, when you're discussing something that society or the platform owners has deemed taboo, like sex being numero uno among it. Like, yes, it's very good when you take bad information and you throw disclaimers on it, but then you say lower it down in the algorithm. And there are times where good information that needs to be getting out to people is being buried in these algorithms because there's some sort of social value put on the content itself. So someone could be discussing, like, the importance of healthy sex measures to avoid STDs and HIV, for example, and that's going to be labeled the same way and buried in the algorithms as someone who's like, yeah, let's promote like free sex for everyone, da 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 da, you know, and like maybe posting pornographic materials or whatever, which I understand should be removed altogether. But when they're given the same weight and they're buried the same, it starts to become really difficult to actually find conversations or good information about material that maybe shouldn't be buried. So I'm sort of 50-50 on that one. I love the disclaimers. I'm just not sure. Like, it's really hard when we start to say, like, well, we value this kind of information over that kind of information as a society.
But that comes to the I mean, I was responding specifically to Josh talking about misinformation.
Yeah, but it
comes whereas you're talking about taboo subjects, which is, I think, is a slightly different.
It's totally different, but that's my point. It's totally different. So we start talking about what information should get out there and how, right? They get kind of lumped together, right? Like, and that was just to your point, like an answer to Josh's question when he was saying, what was it, like, what sort of...
It was like, where do you draw the line on where you should be, like, stopping the flow of information?
Yes.
For me, like the vaccine talk and the misinformation around that cost lives. So I'd see that as something that maybe there needed to be some kind of censorship in. But I also understand, like, if you mark a certain kind of topic, even like a health topic, as taboo and not something that can be talked about. And I know it's a fallacy to say slippery slope, but people are going to draw the lines differently under different administrations. So that is something that even could be taken advantage of. Like, trans rights, for example, like if there was something like if you had a transphobic person in charge of censorship and they'll say like, oh, this is medical misinformation talking about,
yeah, let's bury it. Yeah
So I do see the problems with it. That's why I see a need for censorship in certain areas, but I also see the problem with trying to censor in certain areas because it can always be taken advantage of.
Yeah. So my answer then to your question is that when it comes, there's a difference between free speech and an opinion, right? And information. And that needs to be, like, that is where the line needs to be, is are you presenting something as information, as fact? And I think that that actually should be very heavily regulated. I don't know who's doing the regulating, so I'm not presenting a solution, right? I'm presenting an opinion about where to draw the line, right? I think that we need to have information scrutinized and information should be filtered and double checked, but opinions should be able to be freely expressed, right? And opinions are different from like hate speech. If you're talking about, and so this is where you're right, it gets very, very fuzzy where exactly the line is, right?
And but it's difficult on social media because we're talking about algorithms a lot of the time. And as me and Josh both know, because we're both admins for the ACA Facebook groups, and we see all the time, there's like Facebook removing comments from our groups, which we look at and we think, why are you removing that? There's literally nothing wrong with that comment. And right. and they like remove it and flag it up, and it's like it's to me it's bizarre what kind of criteria have you used to make that decision.
Yeah, no, I've been blocked just for the way I worded things to friends, right? I know one of our mutual friends was having a hard time during a holiday, and I was like, man, if I lived any closer to you, I'd come and kidnap you and let you be a part of our holiday celebrations, right? And it blocked me, but it also gave me, like, I got seriously ass spanked for that comment, right? And even when I challenged it and told Facebook, like, no, you're getting the context wrong, and it was reviewed, and they determined that it was indeed incorrect. And even if you read the comments below where the very friend that I was saying it to, he's like, oh, don't worry, I know exactly what you meant. Thank you so much. I love you, right? Like, I really appreciate that. Even then, Facebook was like, nope, we reviewed it, and it's still a threat, like a threatening language or something like that. So, yeah, it can be really, really difficult when we start talking about, because like we were just talking about Josh's specific question of where's the line in general for what people should be able to say out loud. Now you're talking about individual platforms and where's the line for that. It's very confusing if you ask me.
Implementing the line, if we somehow came up with exactly where the line is drawn, implementing censorship on where the line is drawn is probably near impossible with how many platforms are out there today. Like, and with like social media, there's no way to monitor everything everybody's saying. There are people that have said way worse things than Trump and are still on the platform on Twitter because of he was a person of interest because he was the in charge at the time. So everything he said was monitored by everybody. But there's a jackass saying horrible things on Twitter right now, and he's probably not getting monitored anywhere close to how Trump was getting monitored, and he probably should be removed from it. But because he doesn't have the infamy of Trump, he's able to get away with it. And even if bots were coming on there, we're seeing how ineffective and how wrong bots can get, because mm-hmm. AI is horrible at figuring out. The biggest problem I see is they don't understand sarcasm, and that seems to be the majority of
or lingual nuances.
And that seems to be the majority of the issues with these bots, and I don't know how you get around that even if you found the perfect line drawn somewhere.
Not to mention the sheer volume of stuff. I know we've gone away from free speech to free speech on the internet, which is a very specific, more nuanced conversation. But just the volume alone, like, what do you do with it? You talk about Google and like the search results for Google and how the algorithms can put stuff further up in the search results that are less relevant. And then the actual academic papers are just buried on page like 32. And I'm sorry, I don't go beyond page 1 or 2 of the search results. Like, I very rarely get to page 2. It's usually the top 3 results. Not so much for academic paper, but for just general questions. Like, if I want to know like the definition of something or how to do a specific thing or whatever, I'm not going to go dig very deep. And so you're right, like this overflow of information and the abundance of people writing on topics and putting their opinions out there and stuff, like it's almost a like a Goliath. Like, like, how do you handle just the sheer volume?
I mean, the free speech on the internet is like, we keep going back there because that's where the majority of everybody has a voice, and they can get it to, we can get it to somebody in England right now or UK right now. And we're able to process that free speech. Like, we're able to, it's where everybody's able to boom their voice out. But there is, if we want to talk about free speech in person, we can talk about protests and how important that is for people, and how even sometimes that gets abused. Because when I see a problem with free speech is when I see police officers breaking up a lawful protest because it maybe doesn't go for a narrative that they agree with. That would, I would see as where free speech is sometimes violated in the U.S., as we've saw a lot during protests during the pandemic.
And then the question, becomes tying. So oftentimes, especially protests, when violence breaks out, the message gets tied in with the violence. And what we learned recently, especially like with Black Lives Matter and stuff, oftentimes the people who turned violent during the protest were not the protesters themselves, but people who come in and take advantage of the fact that there's protests to cover up their criminal behavior or to just stir the pot and make things worse, right? So that becomes a whole separate issue of how do we separate our rights to free speech from the people who are committing violence and stop running the narrative that, oh, these protests are violent or these protesters are violent, when in fact it's either like 2% of the protesters or it's people coming from outside of the protest and using it as an opportunity.
Yeah, it doesn't take a lot for just a handful of people to cause a lot of damage, especially one of the things about protests, and this is how they always criminalize or demonize it in the media, is you get enough people together, you're not going to have 100% good people there on good faith. Not everybody is there for the right reasons. Some people are just there to cause havoc, but you get, and that's going to happen as soon as you get enough people together, because people are inherently assholes in crowds. So you get enough of that, it shouldn't detract away from the message of what they're trying to do. And that's one of the ways I see, this is how I see free speech actually attempted to be silenced, is they try to, instead of dealing with the issues that the free speech is actually trying to deal with, they deal with like the small percentage of people doing bad things or causing havoc or burning things. And that's not what the majority of these protests were there for. It's against their best interest usually to have these acts of violence, vandalism and stuff, because the wrong news media is going to change the narrative of what they're saying. And even like police officers, again, taking people out for free speech because they don't like what they're saying, even when they're doing it lawfully. And we saw that a lot. That's going against your free speech. So you just got to, the protests that matter are where I'm seeing the most actual violations of free speech.
So what if, say, for example, there's a big protest and the media don't report it so as not to give it any kind of publicity. How does that affect free speech? If the protest goes ahead, let's say it's completely peaceful, there's no detriment in the protest itself, but it's just not reported. It's just not reported upon, and their voices aren't heard outside that immediate area where they are.
And that happens actually quite a bit. There are local level protests that never get really publicized, or they get like under publicized. Especially, I would say with a lot of Native American protests, right? Like for their lands and stuff, some of them get big enough to where they're publicized, especially where it comes to say like the oil pipelines going through lands that have been given to Native Americans. Like, oops, takesy backsies, right? So some of those get publicized, but many don't when it comes to things like water rights. Or land usage rights, like how they're allowed to use their lands that the government gave them, that the government's now telling them how to use it, right? A lot of those protests and other local protests do go unpublicized or just underpublicized, where they're kind of like sort of, you could dig up an article about it, right? But you'd have to be looking for it.
And that's not a violation of free speech. It's an unfortunate aspect of just not being capable of getting your message out there on your own.
Yeah, I think that there could be like, yeah, arguments both ways, because I don't think it's definitely not a violation of free speech, because the government, as far as I know, the government is not calling up the media and saying, no, I don't want you to go down there and cover this thing because we don't want to. Right. That would be a clear violation of free speech. But just the media being in general not interested in that particular story, or it not catching enough attention. I'm with Josh. It's unfortunate. It just means that some messages don't get out there as much as they could or maybe should.
And the media is made to make money now. Like, we have the 24-hour news cycle where they're going for whatever is going to get the most eyes on the screen. And this, like, certain topics, regardless of how important they may be, don't catch people's eyes. And that's what they're chasing.
Yeah. What about individuals then who go out in the street and kind of, because there are different ways of looking at this. You can kind of have advertisers who go out in the street and advertise to street preachers and kind of all sorts of things in between. What kind of levels of free speech do you think should be looked at with the kind of various levels of just individuals or groups of two or three people? Buskers even, you know, getting licenses to busk on the street and things like that. Whether you should be allowed to busk freely, because in where I live, you need a license to busk. You can't just go out and make music.
You realize you're speaking British to two Americans, and we're both like staring at you like, I can't even say that word, busk? Busk?
Busk. It's where a musician goes and plays music on the street. I didn't realize that was a British thing. I thought that
Oh my gosh, we were both looking at you like,
street musicians happen. I think there are certain areas where they're not allowed to do it, but I've never tried doing it myself. But like, I live not far from Hollywood. We have all kinds of performers that are just on the streets. We have people dressed up as Batman, Spider-Man, Batman playing guitar. It happens. There's nothing wrong with that. I think there's like noise ordinances. So there's probably like certain areas where they're allowed to do that. And that makes sense to me because of like, if somebody was able to just start busking outside of my house, I'd be pretty damn annoyed by them.
I'd be upset. Yeah, so that's what I was going to say, is I think it comes down to city ordinances, and that's tricky when you're talking about free speech. So being able to go on a street and say, like, do street preaching, right? Like, there might be an ordinance against it in a certain area, and then that could potentially become an argument for free speech. I hate freaking street preachers. I think, like, you know, I really think that I even hate a lot of advertising. I think that the amount that we are allowed to be advertised to is asinine, and that businesses should not be allowed to get up in our faces as much as they are. Including like my mail and my cell phone and my emails, and yeah, as much as we want to advertise to you. Thank you, Josh. I do think that there is a lot of compromise and balance that needs to be struck between free speech when you're talking about approaching another person with wanting to tell them something, give them something, sell them something, change their mind about something, and that person's freedom to not be fucking bothered every 2 seconds by other people. So yeah, I don't know. I think it usually comes down to, like, in direct answer to your question, it comes down to, I think, local and city ordinances, whether or not something is allowed in a certain area. But I can say as an individual, that's a struggle for me, is where to draw that line. Because I want to be able to have the freedom to be able to say what I want. And I don't want to restrict somebody else's just because they disagree with me. But I also think that we can be really lambasted with a lot of stuff that's like, maybe advertising up in your face in certain ways isn't appropriate or shouldn't be allowed. I don't know. That's just me being a butthead, getting old and crotchety.
There's a certain amount of people where I think you need to get permits for it, but I'm not sure exactly how many people. But like, if I wanted to walk around selling Bloody Good Film podcast t-shirts and I was just walking around the street, well, I probably might need a license for that.
Just to sell, you'd need a license.
Yeah. So there's some kind of issues with that, with advertising. But if I just wanted to be opinionated and sell everybody on how great the Highlander movies are, there at a certain point, if I got too many people that were really enthusiastic about Highlander, I think it might be a disruption. But if we had like 10 people that were aggressively talking to people about Highlander, I think it'd be more of a nuisance and not anything against free speech. You get 50 people talking about how Highlander deserves more than one movie and people need to watch the second movie, I think that might be something that requires a permit. So there's maybe certain, where laws divide into against free speech is probably how big your crowd is. So like maybe 3 people or is fine. I don't know where the cutoff limit exactly would be to where it's become an event instead of just enthusiastic fans of Connor McLeod.
Right. And then there's the question of like going against what I just said, like directly challenging what I just said, there has to be a line of like, you don't have a right to not be annoyed, right? Like,
yeah,
there might be some forms of free speech, whether it's advertising or street preaching or musicians gathering or whatever, that might bother an individual. But then the question is, do we as individuals have a right to always be comfortable and never be bothered? And that's where I would say, like, yeah, it's a freaking annoyance to me, but I would rather have people have more freedom to be able to express themselves and talk and say things out loud in public spaces, even though I disagree with them and even though I'm annoyed, because I want to have the same rights for all people across the board, right?
Oh yeah, I've seen people do it like on the bus. They'll be like preaching something, and like as annoying as they are and as much of a jackass thing that is to do, I don't think I'd take away their right to do it. I definitely would make sure to crank up my earbuds and maybe make sure they know that I'm wearing something with Satan on my t-shirt, but that's about all I would do.
Or engage in the counter conversation, right? Like if that preacher has a right to go up and talk about Jesus as much as he wants, I should also have the right to disagree with him, right? Like I don't want to. I don't like getting involved in those conversations.
That's
but,
how I started in this whole
street epistemology.
A long, long time ago.
Yeah.
You were a street preacher?
In my early to yeah, as a street preacher.
Buddhist street preacher. Yeah.
In my mid-teens, early to mid-teens, that's when I was going out in the street and coming across these street preachers and having conversations with them. And that's how I started all this kind of getting interested in kind of all this old talking to people and having conversations. And, you know, and I like listening to street preachers where I've got an opportunity to speak to them.
Well, like, there's a difference between, like, I can tolerate them a little bit more on the street. I've also been a jackass to them on the street because I've said I was used to be the immature angry atheist, and I was like flipping off and yelling at the street preachers. Now I just kind of
probably proving their point for them. Yeah.
Yeah. But like that's obnoxious from both sides, I'd say. But when you are on the bus and it's like you got a captive audience, there maybe should be something against it. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe bus regulations, maybe, because I can't say the law is going to say something against street preachers. But if I ran a bus company, I'd tell them to get the fuck off the bus.
And that would be a matter of the company saying, exactly, we're not going to allow this activity on our property. And I think that is very important to maintain too.
And that's literally platforming them, because they're standing on a platform on the bus, and you can deplatform literally at the next stop.
So that brings up an interesting question that maybe we could start to close the show out with, is we talked about platforms like Facebook and stuff like that, and other social media platforms being allowed to determine what is and isn't said on their platform and like regulate their own space. How do you guys feel like that should extend to all businesses or all private spaces, be it like a McDonald's or a Starbucks, down to like, I don't know, like a business being allowed to say like, you as a worker in our business are or are not allowed to discuss these certain things while on the premises of this business?
Well, I have that in my business where we deal in the distribution of political stuff, like advertising materials. And we're not allowed to not deliver it.
Right.
We have to deliver it regardless of what our personal opinion is on that subject, which to me is fair. Give everybody the same. We don't favour one political party over another. We have to treat them all the same. And to me, that's fair. Although we're being told that we're not allowed to kind of express our own opinion, which is kind of a restriction on free speech, but we've got to treat everybody equally. And I think that's fair. I have no problem with that.
I'd say with companies, political religious stuff doesn't really belong in companies. Like, I can understand them putting a restriction on that, but there are some restrictions that they put out, like you can't be talking to your coworkers about your paycheck, which is purely in the business's self-interest, and they're trying to keep you from seeing how maybe you're getting screwed over. So like, if it's something that's about productivity, because I'm going to be arguing with right-wingers if I start talking to people in my work too much. And so that'd be very unproductive.
Or creating a hostile work environment.
Exactly. Yeah. But if we're talking to each other about our pay, and like, I'm realizing that I'm getting way more paid than somebody else, I think that they should know about it because I'm such a nice guy and I'm very virtuous like that. They should know about that, and we should be able to talk about that so that they can go about getting their own pay raise, especially if we're doing the same job. And if they're just as qualified with me as me, they should know how they're getting treated by the company. And like those kinds of censorships from work, I don't think should happen. I don't think they should be legal.
Okay, so now I'm going to play devil's advocate. I agree with what both of you have said, by the way, but I'm going to play devil's advocate and make it a little more of a slippery slope question and say, well, what about private spaces allowing or not allowing certain lifestyles or expressions? Like, oh, you can be privately gay, but you can't wear a pride shirt in my establishment. Something like that. Like, what do you guys think about that kind of regulation? Because would that fall under free speech or personal? Like, what would that fall under for you guys?
I think that'd fall under discrimination.
If it's like a pride shirt, it depends on if there's a dress code there. If there's no dress code and they're just like singling that out, then it's definitely discrimination, because of like, unlike political ideologies, whether they're gay, straight, trans, or black, or whatever kind of thing that they're discriminating against them, that's an innate part of who they are. It's not an opinion on certain things. And if you're discriminating against people because of an innate part of them, then the company's fucking up.
Yeah, and another way to put that is, if everybody's wearing a Highlander 1 t-shirt,
there can be only one movie.
Somebody comes in a Highlander 2 t-shirt, proudly representing, and Josh tells them to go home because it's not right, then they're being discriminated. Are they being discriminated against because it's not the uniform of the Highlander 1? Or is their free speech being kind of pushed back? Are they being discriminated against because it's a Highlander 2 t-shirt?
I mean, I like Highlander too, so that wouldn't be an issue for me. But
he probably likes it more than one, huh?
No. But I don't think that's an innate thing. And that's honestly, your scenario sounds like it's part of the uniform where they're supposed to be wearing Highlander one. So I think that the company's okay in that because it's not an innate part of them. Like, I'm not going to say I identify as a Highlander 2 fan. It's not, I wasn't born that way. That was something that I was shown and educated on as it being a good movie, but it was, if I never heard of it, I wouldn't be like able to say I'm a Highlander 2 fan as a person.
So let's take that example, because I know that it's a bit of a silly example just to kind of make things hyperbolic, but now we'll talk about something like a restaurant allowing Christians to wear Christian shirts in it, and shirts with like quotes from the Bible all over them, but then not allowing people to wear pride shirts or make statements about anything in the LGBT community. That would be kind of like the real life sort of counterexample that would have some relevance. Like, can a business say, well, we're a Christian establishment, or well, we're a Buddhist establishment, and so you can't bring these other idealisms, freedom of expression, freedom of speech, into our space and freely express that opinion here in our space?
I'm pretty sure they can't discriminate against them. And I'm pretty sure that's the right way things should be. Although I honestly can't imagine a person wearing a pride shirt where people got upset about an establishment wanting to be there, but it'd be a really bad point for them to push legally to get them out of there.
I think most cases where there's something like this has occurred, there was a case in Britain where some cake bakers, that was the US one. In Britain, it was the hoteliers, I think, who refused a gay couple to spend the night there in the same room, in bed, and they turned them away, if I remember rightly. And then I think it was in the US with the cake makers, wasn't it? It was pretty much the same scenario. It was they were turned, the cake was made for a gay wedding, so they refused to make it. And in both cases, the ruling went against the owners. And in both cases, it was clear discrimination.
Yeah, so that's where I would think there's nuances. I think that freedom of speech and discrimination can kind of go hand in hand, where you're prohibiting someone's freedom of speech and you're discriminating against them. When you talk about those two examples, I think that's clearly, in my opinion, unless there's more nuances I'm missing, that's just discrimination. You're not limiting their freedom of speech. You're limiting their freedom of personhood, right? And so I think that would be just a clear-cut case of discrimination. And I agree with you guys that all of those shouldn't be allowed, and you shouldn't be able to discriminate. So I just want to make it clear that, like, I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate and kind of sussing out where something is or isn't okay. But I think
freedom of speech and freedom of expression kind of go hand in hand
with discrimination. Yeah. And I think that a lot of times you could argue that not only are you limiting someone's freedom of speech as a private establishment, which I think can be allowed. You can say, like, hey, these certain types of speech aren't allowed here, hate speech, political speech, religious speech. But where freedom of speech actually gets into discrimination, now that becomes a completely different conversation, where, oh, person A of religion A can talk about their religion in the workspace, but person B of different religion or of contrasting views cannot. Like, that would be something where I would agree is an example of discrimination and freedom of speech really.
Whereas if you blanket ban all religious speech, that's absolutely fine because you're not discriminating against anybody.
Right.
Although they'll like to say that you're promoting atheism by being secular, but that's usually a really bad straw man.
Yeah, and that can usually be argued against when you talk about toxic work environments. Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of the show, so I'm going to once again reach out to our audience and say, hey, thank you for listening. I think that's fantastic that you've stuck with us through to the end, and I'm sure you have your own opinions. So I'm going to encourage you to jump on Facebook and either find the link of where we posted the video or create your own post and let us know what you think about freedom of speech. What is free speech? What are the limitations of it? What does it mean to have free speech? Have we captured that in your opinion, or did we miss some nuances? Do you have a different opinion about free speech and what it should and shouldn't entail? Other than that, thank you for listening. And gentlemen, closing thoughts.
First of all, please correct me if I'm wrong on the British freedom of speech thing, because I'm sure I got that wrong at the beginning. I can't remember the exact kind of what the British nuances are. So correct me, because I'm pretty sure I am wrong. I'd like to be corrected on that. Other than that, yeah, I think It's been an interesting conversation, and we've touched on lots of different areas. Again, it's one of those where you can talk about things like comedy and it be nuanced, or you can go all the way to discrimination against somebody because of the personhood. I think it's a wide-ranging topic, which in a lot of cases is pretty clear-cut, I think, when all comes down to it and we look at the evidence and things like that. But freedom of speech is... I've never been censored, and I say some pretty wild shit. It is what it is. If I need censoring, I know people who've been deplatformed for saying perfectly innocent things. So it's one of those things where I think if we see it being infringed upon, we should stand up and talk out against it and fight for the rights of people to have that freedom of speech. If it's blatantly offensive and not in the Christian kind of, you've offended my sensibilities way, but if it's genuinely offensive material and blatantly so, point that out, like, you know, deplatform these comedians who make remarks that they shouldn't be making that are genuinely offensive. We've got the power to do it because we're the people who buy the tickets and watch the shows. That's me.
All right. I also think you should correct Richard for the beginning of this episode. Do any of that. I don't know if free speech as a concept is really a thing, because there are definitely lines where we've kind of come to where there's an issue where you would cut it off. So I'd say mostly free expression, mostly free speech, but there are limits to it. So it's like abundant speech maybe is what I'd advocate for over exactly free speech, and abundant into the upper limits. But whether or not the free speech as it's defined is a thing, I don't believe it is. I think we're always going to find problematic elements. We're also going to find problematic elements as soon as you censor one thing, even on done for the most righteous reason. So the whole idea is a mess, and we as people with our fucked up brains are not equipped to deal with this as accurately as I would like us to be able to.
I like what both of you have to say. I agree wholeheartedly with Josh that freedom of speech as a concept doesn't actually exist. In pretty much all cultures, there's something that is limited, and maybe it does somewhere out in like some utopic society somewhere that I don't know about, but there always is that line where this type of speech is just not okay for this various reason. But what I think is most important to remember about free speech in the way that we think of it as Americans is we're talking about a constitutional right, which is a very specific thing that relates to the government and what they can and cannot tell you. And so when we talk about platforms and businesses and all that stuff, yes, there's a nuanced conversation to be had. And yes, social pressure and how we vote and how we raise our voices does have an impact on that. But that is very, very different than the constitutional right to the freedom of speech, which deals entirely with what a government can do to an individual to stop them from saying something. And even then, I don't think we actually have it the way that we think we have it. There's a lot of ways in which the government does regulate our speech. So I think, to me, I want to leave the audience with my parting thought being that free speech, to me, is more of a slogan than an actual thing. It's something that we latch onto to feel good about ourselves and what we can and can't do in terms of what we can say. But when you really, really, really boil it down, it is just a concept.
And on that note, keep questioning. And on that note, keep questioning.
Interrogate your beliefs.
Stay skeptical.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.